Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. One of the good friends we have to the show for years now has been Colonel Jeff McCausland, and he joins us now. Colonel, always a privilege.
Dave, a great pleasure.
So let's talk about Ukraine and Donald Trump and Putin and Zelensky. And I had another guest on a couple hours ago who's a lawyer who said something very smart, I thought. He said that why he gives the chance of a deal with Ukraine and Russia only about a 30% chance is that deals usually mean someone has won and someone has lost and you make the best deal you can. But much like North and South Korea or China and Taiwan, since no one has had an outright victory, they continue with this weird in-between dance. How does that hit you when it comes to Ukraine and Russia?
Well, I would largely agree. We might argue about percentages, but I think he's exactly right. I think there are two other things to consider. One, I think we're still a little mystified on exactly what the Russians want. You know, there's been a lot of talk of land swaps, which I find bemusing, because there's no really land being swapped. This is all Ukrainian land. There's no argument I've heard of that Ukraine's going to get St. Petersburg now as part of Ukraine in return for Ukrainian territory. So we're talking about land being ceded, not land being swapped. And it's also going to be an argument, is that de facto we recognize you occupy it, or is it de jure that the international community has to recognize Russian sovereignty? And finally, of course, it's not just land, but it's people. There's about 300,000 people in this area who will be, frankly, evicted or choose to leave because they don't want to live under the Russians. And it would also compromise Ukrainians' defenses in many, many ways. So back to the point, of course, is, you know, where is this all going in terms of understanding what the Russians want? Until we get clarification on that, we can't move towards negotiation. And all the energy right now, it seems to be, is it a bilat, a trilat? Where's it going to be? And security guarantees are something you talk about towards the end. And as a consequence, it seems to me the Russians want to win the war, and Donald Trump wants to win the Nobel Prize.
So this next question, Colonel, may be a bit Pollyannish and ham-fisted, but in my life, I'm 60 now, in my life, it's always seemed that the world unified against the really bad guys, typically defined by someone who invades another sovereign country to take their stuff, which seems like what this is exactly. Is this just the way that standing up to the bad guys looks in 2025, or have we sort of lost that?
No, I think you're exactly right, actually. I don't think you're being Pollyannish at all. I mean, what we're talking about here is international norms that were established at the end of the Second World War. We as an international community, frankly, enshrined in the UN Charter, we're not going to accept the transfer of territory due to military means. You know, in 1990, the United States government sent me as a battalion commander and 750 of my soldiers to a place called Saudi Arabia. Why were we there? We were there to reverse a land grab by a country called Iraq that was seizing a country called Kuwait and declaring it the 19th province of Iraq. And we, George W. Bush, Herbert Walker Bush, I should say, at the time said, this will not stand, and we reversed all that. Now, if we don't do that this time, if we don't put some pressure on the Russians this time, then not only does Ukraine lose, but we all lose, and we lose those norms, and we go back to a world that's defined in the Melian Dialogue from ancient Greece, where the strong do what they will, and the weak do what they can, and that's not necessarily a world we want to live in, and that sends, you know, messages out around the globe. And I was reminded of the prime minister, I should say, of Japan, standing in the streets of Kyiv next to Zelensky one time a few years ago and saying, you know, if you're not successful in defending Ukraine, then how are you going to thwart Chinese aggression in the Pacific?
Colonel, kind of a two-part question building off of that. Is the biggest complicating factor in this the fact that we're dealing with nuclear nations, right? I mean, you know, with us and Russia, or if China were to be involved, and then, you know, you kind of led toward this, the precedent that this sets. How much does this have an impact on what might happen with Taiwan down the road? What might happen in other places where bigger powers can say, well, we're nuclear, so we know you're not going to escalate, so we'll just do what we want?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. There's always been a fear of escalation, and that is why some have criticized, and perhaps rightfully so, the Biden administration for trying to manage this war as opposed to trying to give the Ukrainians enough to win the war for fear that it would escalate, go beyond the borders of Ukraine, involve NATO partners, and then you're involved in a nuclear confrontation with the Russian Federation. And some have said in the past that, you know, we're on kind of a slow-rolling nuclear a Cuban missile crisis in dealing with this particular problem and that fear of escalation. And this is why, in many ways, if you talk about North Korea, why did North Korea acquire nuclear weapons? To deter us from coming to visit them. As they saw us invade Iraq, as they saw us go into Afghanistan, obviously they became concerned. How do we deter the United States from doing that to us? Right now, Iran, I would argue, has presented with the same sort of dilemma. Does it, following the American airstrikes that destroyed a large portion of its nuclear capacity, do we negotiate with the West and hopefully find some solution to the economic straitjacket we're living in? Or do we, frankly, accelerate to getting a nuclear weapon, thinking that we need that now to make sure we can deter the Americans, deter the Israelis from further attacks on us? So that fear of escalation, particularly involving nuclear countries, is certainly part and parcel of what we're thinking about in the 21st century.
We're talking to Colonel Jeff McCausland here. Colonel, it seems to me like NATO gets talked about a lot, but not involved a lot. Where does NATO stand these days, just it's standing in the world?
Well, you know, when you saw those seven NATO leaders, to include the Secretary General and Zelensky, show up at the White House on Monday, they were concerned about they were being sidelined. We had a saying in Washington when I worked there, you know, if you're not at the table, you're probably on the menu. And as they watched an American president meet Putin in Alaska, Zelensky certainly worried that there was going to be a division of his country, not unlike Franklin Roosevelt and Joseph Stalin did in Yalta in 1945. And furthermore, the Europeans were there to back up Ukraine, show their support for Ukrainian security, but they are also worried about European security and that this is not a threat solely to Ukraine, but a wider threat to Europe as a whole. And they recall very vividly that in 1938, of course, Neville Chamberlain, the British prime minister at the time, will negotiate with Adolf Hitler and cede some territory from Czechoslovakia to Germany. The Czechs weren't invited to that particular meeting. Adolf Hitler said, that's all I really want. Once that's, I'm satisfied, I'm good here. And we know what happened after that. So they're worried about European security in that regard. And then finally, the Europeans are very concerned about NATO, and they're very concerned, can Mr. Putin very skillfully use this issue of Ukraine as a wedge to drive between the United States and its NATO allies to the detriment of the alliance and to the detriment of the unity of the alliance, which is really for them, again, the ultimate deterrent to a future war.
Colonel, I recently heard a conservative pundit on television, not a bomb thrower, fairly reasonable guy, but more conservative than me, making the point that our involvement in Ukraine has been very valuable from a military standpoint in that we have gathered a lot of intel on Russia's capabilities and lack thereof. Would you agree?
Sure, absolutely, without question. In fact, the intel we provide the Ukrainians, which they use for targeting, has been critically important. And we also, of course, we got to understand that the damage that Ukrainians have done to the Russian military. I mean, there are estimates now that the Russians have had 250,000 dead in Ukraine, maybe as many as 750,000 wounded. That's a million casualties right there. And Russia has suffered more casualties in this war in Ukraine than we, the United States, suffered in World War I. And though the Russian economy is rapidly moving to really being a war economy, obviously this has really, you know, been detrimental to the threat that Russia is posed to the world more broadly. So you could say the Ukrainians, in many ways, are fighting a war for us. And don't forget as well that U.S. defense industries have benefited significantly. Right now, we no longer provide military aid to Ukraine, but we're willing to sell them weapons. That's the construct Mr. Trump has created. Mm-hmm. And while they were at the White House, Zelensky was talking about a purchase by Ukraine of up to $90 billion in U.S. military hardware. So that would be paid for by Ukraine, some perhaps by the Europeans. But that's money going to defense industry, some of it right there in St. Louis, oh, by the way, is to the betterment of those industries and also expands our industrial capacity, which is something that we could say is useful for us in a troubled world.
Colonel, this one's a little bit more political, but as a warfighter, I'm just curious of your take on seeing National Guard troops policing the streets in D.C.
Well, I personally think it's a really bad idea, quite candidly. And the reason it's a really bad idea is, one, obviously there's no evidence that the murder rates or crime rates in D.C. are dramatically up like the president says. In fact, statistics show just the opposite. And sadly, I would probably suggest to you, and I haven't looked at it, but that, you know, the crime rate in St. Louis is probably nearly as high as in Washington, D.C., but we don't see National Guard troops on the streets of St. Louis. Second of all, of course, the National Guard is designed to do crowd control and to come into cities and towns after major natural disasters. They're not trained in police actions, and, you know, that what they're doing right now is something they're not trained in doing. And you put people out there and you arm them in a situation that they're not trained for, well, that's an open invitation to a disaster. And then thirdly, I think the average American, and it'd be interesting to talk to them about this, really don't like seeing American soldiers and their vehicles going up and down their streets unless there's a major social disturbance or a natural disaster. That's not what we're all about. You know, I'm reading a book on the Revolutionary War. British troops going up and down the street was what aggravated the Americans way back when. And then finally, my guess is if you talk to National Guardsmen writ large, they're very proud of what they do, you know, for their communities, and they don't want to do something to their communities. And I fear, frankly, in the longer term, this will have a deleterious effect on recruiting and retention of the National Guard as we move into the future.
You kind of started where I was going to ask you about, Colonel, the psychology of this from the people that are actually being asked to do this. And again, I know that, you know, all of the branches are a little bit different and trained very different ways. But do you think that there's any, I don't want to say universal agreement, but any similar mindset amongst people in all of the service branches that might like or not like this? Or is it just going to be as varied as the rest of the American public?
No, I think it's pretty much just we're talking the Army, because the National Guard in this particular case is primarily the Army.
Right.
You don't have a Marine National Guard. You don't have a Navy National Guard. There is an Air National Guard, but their mission is primarily, you know, aircraft and expanded fighter forces or transport. Very unlikely you're going to call up an Air Force National Guardian and put them on the street performing these type of security operations. But again, I think what they would stress is this is not what we joined the National Guard for. We joined the National Guard to serve our fellow, you know, citizens and not to do something to them. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, I still think this is not what we Americans want our military to do. And as a consequence, I think it will affect that recruiting and retention.
Colonel, you're the best. Thank you, sir.
Good. Thank you, guys. Take care.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. If this song didn't exist and you had a friend who is a fledgling musician and they played this for you, would you be like, oh my God, that's a hit? Or would you be like, that's cute?
I would think it was a hit.
Not this part, but when it hits, you know?
Yeah, I'd be a little mad on this part. This isn't, you know, my favorite intro to a Stone song.
What about here?
Yeah, but see, when you get into this,
I would say people don't really say stuff like honky-tonk blues anymore. I don't know. I don't think it's going to catch on. It's not going to go viral on TikTok.
What would they say now instead of that?
It's a laboo.
Like your skibbity laboo-boo?
Yeah, it's the laboo blues. It's the laboo blues.
Yeah, they'd be like, skibbity, skibbity, skibbity.
And it would be auto-tuned.
Laboo blues.
When I woke up in the morning, my laboo-boo is gone.
No.
Razor's Edge?
Yeah. I thought this would be a fun one for us to argue about after yesterday's kids' meal discussion. Now the question is it rude to box up leftovers when someone else is paying for your meal at a restaurant? So this all played out on Reddit. A 28-year-old man got into a fight with his dad after asking for a to-go box at a restaurant. He ordered his main course, but he said, you know what? I'm in the mood for a side dish, too, so I ordered that as well. I'm assuming it's a situation like a steakhouse where it's like the entree doesn't necessarily come with the side every time. He says, my eyes were bigger than my stomach because I was unable to finish my food, so I asked for a to-go box. But his dad got mad. His dad says, what you just did was rude, and when someone else is paying for your meal, you shouldn't order extra stuff if you're not going to be able to finish.
I'm on the sun side on this one.
Dad's kind of an ass.
Yeah.
You take your own kid out for a meal and you're mad they got two that they're taking some home?
Yeah, like, okay, so I think if, like, I take a friend out to dinner and they order extra food specifically so that they can take some home and I'm, like, I've already offered to pay or whatever, that I think would make me raise an eyebrow a little bit. But if, like, that's your son. You're taking your son out to dinner. Like, come on, man.
I would be like, do you want anything more? Do you have anything at the house?
Yeah.
Like, hey, you want to get a dessert to go? I mean, like, who? That's just weird.
Yeah, very weird to be like, listen here, you little turd, to, like, your own.
What if it's not familial? What if it's just a friend? You say, I'm taking you out to dinner, and they pull that.
It really depends, right? So if you're just ordering, let's say you want a steak, and it comes with whatever, asparagus, and they're like, I want a baked potato. That's not going to freak me out. And if they don't finish it, I don't care if they take it home.
Agreed.
I agreed to buy you dinner. I didn't limit you. I didn't say, hey, no sides. Hey. Don't be leaving any for tomorrow.
What if they ordered a big honking piece of carrot cake and took that home?
I mean, it's fine. Maybe I didn't want to sit there and wait for them to eat it.
What if they ordered something for their significant other?
That
and
would be
home?
Out of line.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. Nope.
If you guys are being treated to a meal, do you try to keep the price in mind?
100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I do too.
Absolutely.
I try to get, like, the lower end of the menu. I think they're both wrong in this situation. I don't think, if someone's buying your meal, I would try to keep the cost down. So the son's a little wrong for that. The dad is not necessarily wrong for being upset, but he does make himself the rude and out of line one for, like, making a big deal of it at the restaurant.
I just can't imagine giving my kid a hard time for that. My dad would never give me a hard time for that. My dad's the boomerest boomer of all. You know, army guy and all that. He would never have thought twice about that with me or my brother or my sister.
Yeah.
Not even, like, whatever, take it home. That's great. You want my leftovers too?
I don't know. This dad seems like he was having a hard day.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it sounds like there's something there.
Yeah.
There's something, some friction of some kind.
Yeah, I mean, it could
this.
Be that the kid's a huge loser.
Yeah.
The dad is tired of it.
Yeah, he pulls this all the time.
Kind of separate of this entirely.
Honest to God, that could be true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be true, and it could be true that dad's just a jackass.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.